Good morning. I'm Andy Bocarsley, and I'll be moderating this session. We're going to continue with our discussion of creation and creation care environment this morning. Our first speaker is Joanne Moyer from the King's University, and we're ready to get started.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. My name is Joanne Moyer. I come to you from the Aspen Parkland in Treaty 6 territory. So the research I'm presenting on today is an investigation of environmental engagement among Mennonites in Canada through a content analysis of the Canadian Mennonite magazine. This magazine is a primary forum for nationwide conversations for members of Mennonite Church Canada, which is a conference, and the research provides a longitudinal window into environmental activities, theological conversations, and opinions and debates from multiple facets of the Mennonite Church Canada Conference community. This research came about because since about 2007, I have been collecting a rough record of environmental articles in the magazine, literally reading it and dog-earing pages and then writing it down. I serve on the Council of the Mennonite Creation Care Network, so I was doing this as a way to collect Canadian stories for a binational organization so they could tell our stories on the website. And I thought, well, I've got all of this information, we could do something with it. So in the fall of 2021, I hired a student research assistant to help me do a more systematic search and analysis of the magazine. So Julia, my student, started by going through my rough record and filling in gaps, so periods when I was out of the country, digital content that I hadn't accessed, that kind of thing. She rechecked the volumes in my records and then also filled in the earlier volumes from before my record started, going back to the beginning of the digital archives, which started in 2003. And so she was skimming titles and also searching keywords. So we ended up with an analysis from 2003 through 2021. All of the items that we identified with environmental content were entered into an Excel file. You can see part of it there. And we identified whether articles just mentioned something environmental, so maybe climate change included in a list of topics of concern, or if the entire article had an environmental focus. And for those focused articles, those were all analyzed using NVivo qualitative coding software to identify patterns and themes. The research questions which guided that analysis were, what are trends over time? What areas of environmental concern are addressed? What types of activities are described? Which actors and organizations are involved, and what ethical or theological motivations and justifications for environmental engagement are discussed. So before going into that analysis, I just want to provide a bit of framing and context for environmental work within the Mennonite community in Canada. Mennonite Church Canada and the conferences that preceded it have been active on environmental issues in some capacity since the 1970s. So, for example, the first statement with an environmental focus was released in 1977 to address the energy crisis of the time. That statement was followed by several others that I've listed on the slide, including the 1989 statement, which resulted in the creation of the Mennonite Environmental Task Force, an agency that spearheaded environmental awareness work for two binational conferences for about a decade. Among other things, they hosted a creation summit in 1995 and subsequently published a book of essays about Mennonite theology and the environment that was published in 2000. The task force was dissolved in 2001 after some conference restructuring that created Mennonite Church Canada and Mennonite Church USA, so we kind of did that. Geographically, and subsequently, the Mennonite Creation Care Network was created in 2006, and that brings us about up to where our analysis begins. So I will address each of the research questions, starting with trends over time. So you can see two figures here. The first one shows the number of environmental articles by year over the research period. The blue line at the top is all of the articles. The brownish red one at the bottom is the mentions, and the green line in the middle is the focused articles. And then the other one shows the percentage of content per issue by page, and that's just looking at focused articles. So both show some fluctuations, but kind of a general trend of stable and maybe increasing content right at the moment. So I'll offer a few guesses to explain some of those fluctuations. There's a peak you can see around 2005 to 2008. This is the period during which the Mennonite Creation Care Network was formed. Mennonite Church Canada adopted several creation care resolutions that all reference later, and all of that seemed to lead to some pretty robust conversations. There's also a dip you can see in 2015 that likely relates to two significant decision-making processes within the church community that happened in 2016, one about sexuality and one about restructuring the conference again, both of which consumed a lot of energy for several years. I can tell you from experience, if at a church conference people have the choice to go to a workshop about sex or one about creation care, they go talk about sex. So, and then finally, we also looked at authorship. So there were over 600 different authors for all these articles, and the top 10 authors of environmental content were staff writers, mostly regional correspondents. So what that indicates to me is that this environmental sustainability content was coming from a broad swath of the community, not just a small fringe. There were also, though, several regular columnists who frequently contributed environmental sustainability content, and these were typically voices that were pushing the more radical edges of the conversation. So next we'll look at areas of environmental sustainability that were discussed in the magazine and also how they were addressed. So the table here shows the categories that emerged from the analysis in order of frequency, and I'll comment on a few of the top categories and you'll see some headlines from some of the articles. So the top category, maybe not surprisingly for Mennonites, was food and agriculture. These articles discussed concerns about harming or protecting land through farming practices, consumer choices, and also food justice. There was also dialogue between farmers and consumers addressing different perspectives on what sustainability means in a food production and consumption context. Next, we have climate change. So skepticism about climate science can be a barrier in some faith communities, but in the Canadian Mennonite articles largely accepted climate science. Every so often there was someone who would challenge accepted climate science, and that always provoked a bunch of passionate corrective letters and subsequent issues. So overall, fairly general acceptance of science. The focus of these articles was typically calling for mitigation by reducing reliance on fossil fuels and curbing energy use and describing how people were working at that. And while it was clear that this community sees opportunities in technical fixes, such as alternative energy, reducing consumption and energy use was the dominant solution discussed. Then we also had quite a number of articles about Indigenous concerns. These were largely addressing the just or unjust treatment of Indigenous peoples and their ability to freely access and manage their traditional lands, including concerns about energy projects and pipelines, forestry operations, and dams. And coverage of Indigenous concerns spiked with controversial events in the news, such as protests over resource projects, and articles also were reporting on related activism, which received both support and critique from readers. Next, we have a category called Humans in Nature, which is a broad category that captures articles describing people interacting with ecological systems in different ways, particularly at camps and retreat centers, and also including worship in natural settings. Many of these articles reference positive feelings such as wonder, peace, and perspective that people experienced in nature, and talked about how nature helps facilitate connection with God. And then the final category that I'll comment on is consumer culture. This was often identified as the root of almost all environmental problems, and magazine contributors expressed concern about environmental, social, economic, and spiritual consequences of overconsumption, and articles typically included numerous calls for individuals to reduce or avoid excessive consumption. We also asked what kinds of activities were being discussed and what actors were involved. So we divided actors into three groups: individuals, internal organizations that serve the church community, so congregations, conference institutions, schools, camps, that kind of thing, and then external agencies, which are agencies that provide relief and other services beyond the Mennonite community and internationally. So, for example, the Mennonite Central Committee. There was one action approach, education and dialogue, that was prominent across all three groups. This involved individuals seeking and reporting on information, engaging in conversations with others about environmental sustainability, often by attending events that were facilitated by both the internal and external organizations. So looking at individual action, this emerged as a very significant theme in the activities and approaches described in the magazine. And there were two primary approaches. One was mindful consumption, which involved reducing consumption and making choices intentionally to match key values such as stewardship, justice, simplicity, and peace. So people were talking about buying less, thrifting, and buying ethically made, fair trade, or sustainable products. And then in terms of activism, there were articles describing individuals pursuing organized political activism, such as participating in protests, marches, and letter writing campaigns. And this activism was addressing both local concerns, such as water contamination, and global concerns, such as climate change. In terms of the internal organizations, the primary action responses were projects aimed at making organizational operations more environmentally sustainable through both technological and behavioral approaches. So I'll just go through a couple of examples. Mennonite Church Canada, as I mentioned before, passed some resolutions in 2007. One was a creation care affirmation statement, and another was about reducing energy consumption at national assemblies. And then there were subsequent articles assessing and wrestling with the greening of gatherings. There was also some advocacy within Mennonite Church Canada. So, for example, former executive director Willard Metzger attended two UN international climate change conferences. Universities and congregations were doing similar things, lots of technological kind of greening, like installing solar panels, and also lots of community gardens. And then camps. Camps were interesting because reporting on summer camps, there was lots of articles about summer camps, but they didn't feature much environmental sustainability content. A little bit about things like reducing food waste or, you know, working at sustainability of built infrastructure. And of course, they were involved in providing those nature experiences that I discussed earlier, but the links between those experiences and sustainability education weren't often made very explicitly. And then finally, the external organizations. So these were mostly relief, development, and justice organizations, such as the Mennonite Central Committee, who were delivering projects intended to lessen the impact of environmental problems in other countries, especially on water and agriculture, and also including climate change. MCC also has projects in Canada, and significant ones of those include thrift stores, lots of love for MCC thrift stores, and educational publishing projects. And then I just also wanted to mention community, formerly Christian Peacemaker teams, because they played a significant role in advocacy and solidarity work with Indigenous communities, protesting water pollution, forestry operations, and pipeline projects on Indigenous lands. Across all these action responses, education and dialogue, development and relief work, and individual mindful consumption were the most prominently reported activity types. Activism and advocacy were reported with more frequency in recent years, but also generated the most controversy. And then finally, we look at the theological and ethical motivations and justifications for environmental engagement that were discussed in the magazine. Some of these are common across Christian groups, and others are a bit more uniquely Mennonite. So first we have stewardship, which I'm sure is very familiar to lots of people here, scripturally grounded theological motivation with roots in the creation stories of Genesis, pointing to God the Creator and the mandate of human creatures to care for that creation. This was the most commonly cited theological foundation. The second was eco-justice. So this is linking environmental concerns with social justice issues. In the magazine, most eco-justice discussions were looking at the unequal distribution of environmental consequences globally, especially how the impacts of Western consumption are felt most by the most vulnerable and those least responsible for creating them. Then we get into some of the more uniquely Mennonite ones. Simplicity is a Mennonite theological and cultural ethic, which relates to discipleship, which I'll talk about in a minute, and that mindful consumption action approach I described earlier. While the centrality of simplicity ethics and practice were presented in the magazine as a given within our community, contributors recognized and wrestled with the complexities of living simply within a culture of excessive consumption. And readers were exhorted to embrace simpler lives for their spiritual health, for the well-being of the planet, and as an act of justice towards those who have less. Then we have eco-pacifism. Mennonites also have a long tradition of pacifism and peace work. In the magazine, there were various articles discussing interconnections between violence between humans and environmental harm, and also how a commitment to nonviolence should also be applied to creation. And Mennonites also place strong emphasis on discipleship in terms of following Jesus' teachings and being faithful to God rather than the world. And this ethic was used by magazine contributors to encourage and support environmental sustainability, affirming that living as radical disciples was part of their cultural legacy, so being countercultural, and recognizing how discipleship rooted in community can provide power in numbers. These theologies and ethics were flexible and interconnected, and I'm going to illustrate that with a quote from Leah Reeser-Keller, written in 2021, she was the former executive minister of Mennonite Church Eastern Canada. So she wrote, "Simple living and good stewardship of resources are foundational parts of my Mennonite faith heritage, one that I hold dear even when inconvenient. In the face of the climate emergency, all of us need to make choices that are inconvenient as we commit to following Jesus with costly discipleship. In true relationship with God, we are transformed by God's grace and love in our lives and cannot help but share that love with the world." So just to summarize as I close, this analysis demonstrated a sustained, though fluctuating, trend in the environmental sustainability content in the magazine and a currently, it appears, growing level of interest. During the period of analysis, it's evident that environmental concerns of various types were firmly on the radar of the community in Canada, and that both a theology and a practice of environmental sustainability were established. At the same time, there was some disagreement about what environmental sustainability and related action should entail, especially with respect to more radical activism. In terms of action, education, dialogue, and individual responses were the most common approaches, with more emphasis on personal transformation than trying to affect systemic change at the societal level. There was also a strong message from some contributors that the community response was insufficient in the face of the crisis at hand. This analysis is broad and shallow. It also provides, so it just provides a view of the landscape, but it also provides a foundation for more in-depth studies, which I'm planning to pursue this coming year, and you can ask me about if you're interested. So just a few acknowledgements. A big thank you to my research assistant, Julia, who was a superstar wading through an immense amount of materials with great efficiency and also applying very thoughtful analysis. I thank you for your attention, and I welcome your questions and comments.
Thank you. It's good that there are people who care. But what about the difficult questions, like turning down the central heating during the winter And how about traveling to work every day? Is there a kind of real program to try and economize on the energy there?
There were some commuter challenges, so that showed up some places. I wouldn't say there's like a systemic, organized program to do some of that kind of thing, because different people are doing things in different places. So it's not like, you know, the whole church is saying you should do these things. I don't know if that answers your question, but I mean, it's a bit piecemeal in terms of who's pushing what kind of thing.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I just wanted to comment that I think the Mennonite Church was very early on a pioneer in thinking about some of these things with the More with Less cookbook, which I can still remember. I mean, can you comment on the impact of that particular book?
Well, so in Julia's analysis, there's a whole code just for cookbooks. So I think maybe that answers your question, but yeah, it definitely, that was a big, and it, you know, there are blog series about from recently, written by people who were born after that cookbook was published, who are still writing about it. So yeah, that certainly has shaped, I think, part of that centrality of simplicity ethics within in a modern way, right? Simplicity doesn't mean driving a horse and buggy. It means responding to the global world in a particular way.
Joanne, speaking of cookbooks, this was a tasty talk. And Rich,
thanks, John.
You've got some things there for us to chew on, to push that. Okay. Thank you so much. And I wonder if this methodology you're using is transferable, if other people are using it. This strikes me as a very interesting way to move us all forward.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I saw someone else had done an analysis of the magazine on something completely different, like hymnals or something, or I can't remember what it was, but I think it's something that could be applied in different to different denominational magazines to get a sense of what are people talking about and how are they talking about it, for sure.
Yes, thanks. So to that point, to what extent were the letters to the editor, the opinion pieces, or both informative? Because something like the MB Herald magazine by the Mennonite Brethren Church doesn't have the same degree of opinion letters in it anymore, then it would only be the staff opinions.
Yeah. So, well, I will tell you, when I get the magazine every 2 weeks, I look at the letter section first. I was actually surprised. I don't know the exact number now, but over that almost 20-year period, there were only like 6 letters saying environmental sustainability shouldn't be what Christians are talking about or what Mennonites are talking about. So that, I think, says something pretty significant. But there were floods of letters anytime there was any challenge to climate science opposing or correcting and saying, no, 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 it's really like this. So yeah, the letter section, a magazine that has a letter section, I think is really important for getting this kind of understanding.
Yes, my question kind of builds on a couple of previous questions. And how much do the writers in the magazine reflect the rank and file? I'm thinking I've worked for over 20 years with New York's extension system, and colleagues who worked with farmers and clean Mennonite farmers said that Mennonite farmers are among the heaviest users of pesticides in New York.
Well, and that certainly showed up. I mean, I referenced that in the articles about food and agriculture. There was lots of back and forth between farmers, you know, people critiquing farming methods and then farmers coming back and saying, no, no, it actually is sustainable because of whatever. Because we did look at authorship, and I actually, just before I came, went through the whole list to get that over 600 number. And so there were, you know, big chunks from the people who are staff writers, because obviously they're writing more articles, but also lots of other people who were, and there are lots of special to the Canadian Mennonite articles where people who are from the rank and file, as you're calling it, would be contributing. So it was coming from all over the place. It's not, because I was really curious, you know, is it just coming from these fringy people who are writing columns to push the leftist agenda within the church, or people like Anthony who's presenting next to, I think I had one of your articles up there and then I replaced it with something else. But anyways, you know, who are leaders in the community who are talking about this kind of thing. But no, it was coming from those people, but and from other places as well. So it's coming from all over the place.
Okay, I think it's time to move on. But let's thank our speaker once more for a wonderful time.